better for the serious try. Now you make the scene all day, but tomorrow they'll be held to pay.
We are the Nonprofits. I'm your host, Dennis Lube, who does not get his morality from God, along with Matt Dillahunty, who
Hello.
Did not instruct Jesus, Russell Glasser, who is not channeling Moses, and Schilling, who, as unlikely as it seems, is not Satan. We're coming to you live from the new Dillahunty International Studios on the 24th of March, 2012, in the beautiful city of Austin, Texas, and not, as one would expect, Babel. Our musical intro was Hell by Squirrel Nut Zippers. This show is sponsored by the Atheist Community of Austin, a nonprofit educational organization for the promotion of positive reality and the separation of Bronze Age fiction and state. If you want to learn more about the ACA, don't pray. Instead, just contact their voicemail at 512-371-2911 or visit their website at www.atheist-community.org. The Nonprofits tries to broadcast live every Saturday from 10 to 11 a.m. Central Time. But when we don't, it's not because the sun is standing still in the sky. It's because not enough of us can make it to the studio. When we are here, instead of wishing God will change our hearts, listeners should just join the chat room and participate in the show by following the directions at www.nonprofitsradio.com. So, since Armageddon has not happened, and you're here anyway, you might as well sit back, relax, and enjoy the show.
All right. So this is like the first week in the new place where everybody's here, and yet I'm still not up and running with the live stream. So if we completely fuck this up, we can just start over.
Awesome.
So yeah, if you've been showing up and trying to participate in the live chat or trying to connect to the live stream, we apologize. It just hasn't quite got together yet. Moving is fairly complex and difficult ordeal.
Time-consuming occupation, yes.
Yeah, it's trying to find time. But yeah, we're set up and doing shows. And one of the things we're going to do is, because it's such a long drive for people, is next week we're going to experiment with having those who have to drive the farthest get a call in over Skype or Google Hangout or something.
Yes.
But it's Reason Rally Day, so it probably doesn't matter that we're not streaming because
right.
everybody
no
else on the
listening.
Planet is at Reason Rally, aren't you? I know Martin Wagner from Atheist Experience is up there. And he's supposed to be updating the blog with information about where he is and where you can meet. And hopefully there's, you know, the 30,000 plus people they were expecting. I know that there's some rain in the forecast.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's what we do. When Governor Perry prayed for rain in Texas, we had the biggest drought until the atheists got together in Houston and then it rained. So, you know, it's kind of fitting that the atheists would bring that rain to Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
But obviously,
Poseidon is pleased at your efforts to undermine the Christian God.
Yes. So we didn't have a show last week. Apologies. That's just the way it's going to be from time to time. We're still getting the building set up so that we can move the studio out of Dillahunty International Studios, which has gotten slightly smaller, and into the ACA library, which is really nice and getting cooler. So we've got there's some stuff left to be done with internet access and stuff. So quick news items before we get to the or I guess in more announcements before we get to actual news items. Schilling, the ACA pub crawl.
Yes, on Saturday, April 14th, we're gonna have the something annual pub. I forget how long it's been going on, but we're going to meet around 7 o'clock at the Dog and Duck at 17th and Guadalupe. And we usually spend about 90 minutes there so everyone can eat and get organized. And then we head out for a pub crawl for several hours. And it's always been a damn fine event. We usually get about 30 people showing up. We have a design for shirts, but I'm not sure if we're going to be able to get them out in time. But anyone who's interested in shirts can send us a message. And when we have a printer lined up, we can go ahead and get those done.
Cool. The another thing that's coming up, and you know, when I on the TV show, I'm constantly mentioning that if you can come to our events, as whether you're atheist or atheist friendly, you don't have to be a member to come. There are, though, a handful of events that are restricted to members and guests of members, and one of them is actually happening this coming Saturday. The ACA is having their Equinox / Matt's birthday / Matt and Beth's new housewarming party thing. Basically, an excuse for the ACA to get together at somebody's house like we used to, and have a drink. Yeah, let's just be honest. We're gonna drink and eat and have fun. Probably won't be as much
in that order, I would imagine.
Yeah, it probably won't be as much, you know, like Rock Band Guitar Hero-y as some of the past ones have been. But we have more space downstairs, so we're looking forward to that. The information is up on the website if you're a member. And if you're not a member, why aren't you a member? Because it's membership renewal time. February is when membership renewals happen. It's when our membership dips to its low point of about 3. I think there are 3 people who get it paid like that day or the day before. And so in February, March, and April, it's this constant, hey, it's time to renew your membership. So I'm reminding everybody, renew your membership. How many people in this room are current members?
No.
Beth and I. Okay. Unfortunately, the ACA's bylaws are such that if you're not a paid member, you cannot be a recurring member on a podcast.
Okay, but, well, that's our show. Thanks for tuning in.
To the benefit, it's not like this has been much of a recurring podcast lately.
That's where I was going, yeah. I can't really call you guys regular members of a podcast that we don't do regularly. But anyway, just that's a quick reminder for people to get their renewal stuff in. Also, ACA has the happy hour every Thursday, and that's at Dog and Duck as well. And we've started the ACA craft night on Fridays, which is happening at my place again. We had a couple people the first week, a couple people the second week. We're looking at maybe a couple people the third week. We're thinking we may change that. Oh, for all of you who don't live in Austin and can't come to these events and you're bored stiff and wanting me to get past the announcements, too bad. Get over it. Move to Austin. Move to where the food is.
Well, I imagine, you know, several of them turn up for something at some point in Austin.
Yes.
And if we don't announce this shit every week.
Yeah, it's true.
And when they can make it, they're not going to hear about it.
It's true. When people are here for South by Southwest or when they're in town for other things or they're on vacation and they swing through Austin, it's good to know that you can come to the TV show and sit in the studio. We had a packed house last week. You can come to the after show dinner. You can come to the happy hour if you're there on Thursday. We're doing something all the time. And so if you happen to make your way through Austin, just come to an event. And by the way, you don't have to actually craft to come to craft night. And there's a chance that we may kind of change the nature of craft night and make it ACA movie night that we used to have. Yeah, and then
I'm pretty sure that of all the email we get that goes unanswered, if you write and say, I'm coming to Austin, are you going to be on, where do I go? Those almost always get answered.
Yeah.
So
that's what's going on in Austin with the ACA. Some quick notes on my schedule, because I kept getting beat up by people for not saying where I was going to be when until like the day before. So I posted on the blog and on Facebook. Tonight I was supposed to be at Sam Houston University. That event has been postponed. We were going to talk about the superiority of secular morality. I apologize. There was some problems scheduling at the university. Beth and I were ready to hit the road right after this show, but we're going to reschedule that. And because it's only just like a 3-hour, 3.5-hour drive from home, we can pretty much pick any Saturday that I'm not doing something else, go out and do the talk. I just want to make sure that they get the event set up the way they want and that it's publicized enough so that we don't drive 3.5 hours to talk to 2 people. But April 14th, the North Texas Secular Student Convention, which has a ton of speakers. I announced on last week's Atheist Experience. I'll be there doing a joint debate with J.T. Eberhard on Does a God exist? God's God exist? Also, I know Hemant Mehta's going to be there. I know because he and I have never been to a convention together, so this will be the first time we'll actually get to interact. And we rely a lot on Hemant's blog for news items for this show and stuff, and so it's going to be great to get to interact with him.
But is there going to be beer?
I don't know.
Because that's it's the same night as the ACA pub crawl, so people can pick and choose.
But that's because you scheduled the pub crawl after I had already decided.
I scheduled the pub crawl for the one weekend that I didn't know you were booked.
Yes, so I'm gonna miss the pub crawl, but if you're in Austin, you should still go anyway because everybody else is still going to be there. April 21st, I'm doing the exact same debate on my own. I will be taking off the JT Eberhard training wheels that will probably help me survive the first week, and I'll be doing this in Binghamton, New York, against a gentleman by the name of Jay Lucas. It's 7 to 9 p.m. at Binghamton University Lecture Hall Number 1 on April 21st. April 28th, I'm at the UW-Madison Atheist Fest to give my talk on the superiority of secular morality. May 18th through 20th is the Imagine No Religion 2 conference in Kamloops, British Columbia, where I'll be giving a talk, which may be the superiority of secular morality or maybe something else, and I'll be doing a debate, another team debate, this time with Chris DiCarlo, on the existence of God. So I've got three debates coming up on the same subject. By the time I get to Imagine No Religion 2, I should be extremely finely honed on that topic. June 23rd, I thought I was going to be at the Oklahoma Freethought Convention. That was actually a bit of email confusion, and I won't be, although I may still go up for it. I don't know yet. And July 6th through 8th is the Secular Student Alliance Leadership Conference. So I'll be at all that stuff.
Cool.
And that's all of the announcements. We can actually get to like real news stories now. So how was everybody's week off?
Weeks. Ugh. Plural.
We were here 2 weeks ago. Yeah. Okay.
Qualifies as plural, I suppose.
Well, we skipped a week.
Which last show.
Yeah, we skipped. How were your months off, Dennis?
Oh, very, very nice. Yeah. Lots happened.
All right. So in the news stuff, there's a slew of books that are coming out or have come out or are getting ready to. Greta Christina, her book is now out for in e-reader format for Kindle and Nook and stuff.
It's called Why Are You Atheists So Angry? 99 Things That Piss Off the Godless. And it is like an extension of that talk that she gave, which I watched and was great.
I'll say this. First of all, love Greta. Always have. But this book, I haven't read it yet. I'm kind of waiting for the paper one so that I can get my friend to sign it, which is, you know, always cool. But I read the original blog post, loved it. She started giving a talk about Why Are You Atheists So Angry? And I heard it multiple times at different events and loved it every time. The first time I heard it in person was at the American Atheist Convention last year. And it almost made me cry. She is somebody who says the things that I'm feeling. We're completely in sync on this atheist anger issue. And she says it so well and with so much passion. It was one of my favorite talks that I'd ever heard from an atheist. And so when I found out that she was writing this particular book to kind of expand on that and get it out to the public, I haven't read a single page of this book, and I'm 90% confident, if not more, that I'm going to absolutely love it. It's the type of thing that I think is needed. I know Greta at least well enough from her work. I mean, we don't, you know, it's not like we hang out and drink all the time, but I know her well enough from her work to know that she put a lot into this, and it was based off of something that I thought was really outstanding, and I am extremely optimistic, and I would encourage anybody, if you've got an e-reader, and want to read something that is simultaneously inspiring and heartbreaking and encouraging, I can't give it a higher recommendation.
And here are a few things you might like to know about the book. First of all, it's self-published. She had a hard time trying to get a publisher to to print this, and so rather than go through the rigmarole of trying to sweet talk people, she just created her own impromptu publishing company. The book is now the number one book on atheism in Amazon, and number 120 of all Kindle books sold.
That's amazing.
In any category.
Wow.
Well, in addition to that,
yeah, fill that down.
There are more books coming out.
There are. Richard Carrier has a new book, and one of the things that I'm gonna kind of go through this real quickly. I'm hoping to have Richard on here on nonprofits or as a special nonprofits an interview. He's somebody that I've wanted to sit down and talk to probably since The God Who Wasn't There is when I first became aware of him. Now he's on Freethought Blogs as we are, but. He's another person in the atheist community that I've respected and admired for a number of years, but haven't had a chance to really interact with. And this week he posted something on his blog that rips apart an article that was written by Bart Ehrman on Huffington Post, which, man, I hardly ever find anything in Huffington Post worth reading beyond like what Vic Stinger writes, but I'll get to that in a second. He ripped Bart Ehrman to shreds. Bart has a new book coming out, which apparently is on the historical Jesus thing. And I thought that Richard's review of that HuffPo article was right on the money. And it made me think about some statements that I've said. And I may have been making a mistake or being unfair because I've been kind of dismissive of the mythicist position. And for clarity, with what Richard said in his article, I've agreed with and said that many, many times about whether or not a Jesus exists. There may or may not be an actual person behind that, but the stories that are in the Bible, the character described by those stories is somebody that I've always considered, well, not always, but since becoming an atheist, I've considered to be a legend. And it reminds me a little of perhaps Paul Bunyan or King Arthur, where there may or may not be a person, but everything that we know about this individual or everything of importance about this individual is something that I think we can clearly identify as myth. There seem to be two camps of mythicists. There are the mythicists who hold that position that I just mentioned. And then there are those mythicists who assert that the entire thing is a fiction created and they build a conspiracy theory around it. That is what I see from people. Granted, I haven't read
Zeitgeist.
Yeah, it's a little Zeitgeist. It's a little the astrotheology folks are kind of offshoot of this mythicist position. I have not seen her new work, but Acharya S's early work falls into that category. Her new work may be much better. I don't know. And Bob Price is somebody else that I'd want to talk to because he's given Acharya S or D.M. Murdoch praise for her newer books. And I don't know if this represents Bob changing his position or Acharya changing hers or some kind of merging. I don't know. I just haven't been able to follow a lot of it. But I'm looking forward to Richard's book, and I'm going to try to get him on here to perhaps talk about this issue of the historical Jesus versus the mythicist versus the astrotheology kind of conspiracy theory mythicist that I've always rejected. Vic Stinger has a new book coming out. B.Z. Meyer's book is supposed to be out, I think, in June or July. Uh-huh. Yeah, we'll have more information, and hopefully we'll have some of these people on here to talk about their books.
And
who's
doesn't Sam Harris have a book out? Free Will?
Oh, yeah.
Free Will, yeah.
Sam Harris has been publishing...
Little books, yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to... I loved End of Faith. I loved Moral Landscape. I was not a big fan of Letter to a Christian Nation because I got the hardback copy, which I don't know. It seems to be about 3 pages.
Yeah.
Was the same price as a full book. But the content of it, with the exception of the Bible saying pi = 3 argument, was good. And I thought it was a good thing. He's now publishing ebooks. The latest one is about free will. I have not yet read it. The one prior to that was on lying. I read that. And he seems to be making a case for not ever lying while acknowledging that there may be moments where you're going to anyway, but he wants to tiptoe away from that. He wants to see if you can go without lying at all. I disagreed with some of the examples, but I still think, you know, Moral Landscape's great, and I'm looking forward to reading what Sam has to say on free will, because I'm pretty sure... We had this three-hour free will debate many years ago.
Oh, yeah, many years ago.
You
don't remember that, do you?
Evidently, it was inevitable that you would forget. Where it was everybody against Dennis.
That's right.
And the thing is, in the discussions that happened after the show, unless I'm misremembering, we pretty much reached the conclusion that all of us, for the most part, agree on what we do have, and that the disagreement was largely about whether or not that qualified as free will.
It could be. I don't recall.
Okay. That's the way I'm remembering the discussions.
Yeah, that was before my time, so I'd be fresh into it.
I'm betting you would be on Dennis's.
Everyone against Dennis and I. Yeah.
Now, I haven't read Free Will, but I suspect he's on my side. I suspect Sam Harris is on my side.
Well, the thing is, I suspect he is too. And I also suspect that we're roughly on the same side.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think some of this came down to what you are willing to call free will,
right,
whether or not you are willing to label it free will.
Yeah.
None of us, including Jeff, although I'm loath to speak for him when he's not here, were advocates of the type of libertarian free will that, for example, Christians seem to think we have.
Right. Right. We all agreed
that's bullshit.
Free will did not exist.
I've been a compatibilist along with Dennett, or in agreement with Dennett, on his books like The Varieties of Elbow Room, The Varieties of Free Will Worth Wanting. I don't find the subject to be that big of a deal, because it doesn't matter to me whether it's libertarian free will or no free will or an illusion of free will.
Right. It doesn't inform your action.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's no reason to really rehash that. But yes, Sam has a new book out on free will. I haven't read it yet. Has anybody else here read it?
I have not read it yet. I've got it, but I haven't read it yet. I'm in the middle of a Greg Egan novel. So.
Well, that is your assignment for next week.
All right.
It's got to be short.
Well,
it's,
yes,
yeah, he's short. He's pumping out short ones.
Yes, it is short.
So
I actually want to mention that my dad just read Freedom Evolves for the first time and has been having an email exchange with Dennett that he shared with me.
Oh,
so
great.
That was kind of cool.
I wish I was having an email exchange with Dennett.
Well, I'll tell him to get in touch.
It would be nice to get Dennett on the show.
Sometimes these authors will talk to you.
Yeah, I haven't had any problem doing it. It's just that, you know, about the time that I was eager to get Dennett on the show is when he had his heart attack. And so it kind of fell by the wayside. And he's been working. Don't do that, Dennis.
Sorry.
Clonk, clonk.
Every single noise of that just went in there. He's been working with the Clergy Project. And we're looking to get Jerry DeWitt on the show, too. There's a lot of stuff that we're hoping to do. But let's get to other news items other than just books that are coming.
I got something kind of lighthearted for you.
Cool.
It's a Dear Abby column that we can reply before we find out how she replied.
Okay.
Dear Abby, I will graduate from college in June and be a social worker. I am psychic. Although I dislike that word because it conjures up visions of crystal balls, quacks, and scams. For legitimate psychic individuals, it can be overwhelming to live this way. I first noticed my ability when I was young, but I repressed it because my folks thought I was imagining things. It began to resurge in college. The school is haunted, so I have become used to daily interactions with ghosts, often in the dead of night. I also noticed that during client counseling sessions, images will pop into my head. I once gave a classmate the willies by perfectly describing the garden in her backyard, having never laid eyes on it. My advisor says I must never tell my clients the things I see in them because it will frighten them. It's hard to separate my own thoughts and emotions from those of spirits around me. I'm concerned about my psychic ability in relation to my clients. If I pick up on abuse in the mind of a child, for example, am I obligated to report it? Being psychic is as natural to me as having blue eyes. It will never go away. I must now find the means to manage it. I don't want a career as a medium. I'm dedicated to the profession I have chosen. Can you offer me advice?
If she was psychic, she should have known better than to go to university for fucking social work. She would have seen the wasteland of dead end that would immediately follow. So that alone indicates that she's probably not that psychic.
And if you're psychic, why are you asking questions?
There's $1 million for her.
Mm.
If she can just demonstrate that it's true.
Good advice.
I would highly recommend that she apply, because the first step towards her, either this will, either it'll have no effect at all on what she believes, or it will have her rethink her ability, which I doubt is going to happen, or we'll have confirmed proof of, you know, psychic ability. But until such time as we have confirmation of psychic ability, you're not obligated to report your imaginings about abuse. But the thing is, we're pretty good at picking up on things that don't necessarily require, you know, or that aren't psychic. You can tell when somebody's feeling bad or whatever. So you may be picking up on real things and just calling it psychic ability.
Well, that could be the case, but what's more troubling is the level of certainty that she's going to have about it.
Yes.
Where when she's wrong, she's going to think that she's psychic and can't be wrong, and very likely will do far more damage than good in that sort of situation. But I do love the image conjured up by her instructor's advice to her. It just sounds fantastically patronizing. Oh, no, don't tell them about that, because that'll just freak them out. They can't handle that. Yes. So that's why you should never mention it again.
And that's the only reason, no doubt.
Yeah. They can't handle it like I can.
The other kids are just jealous.
So those are all good advice, wow. And I certainly hope that dear Abby will come up with something equally useful.
Hang on. I'm getting a vision. I see Abby acquiescing to the psychic idea and giving poor advice. What did she say, Russell?
Dear Gifted, instead of using your visions to form judgments about your clients, use them to guide you during interviews. If you do, you will then be better equipped to provide concrete proof of the need for an intervention than revealing you saw something that others can't see or wasn't disclosed to you. Many people have psychic abilities to a greater or lesser degree than you do, and those vibes can be invaluable. It is possible that your gift will give you insight into the individuals you will serve. I wish you success.
So here's the thing. I could go along with the first paragraph.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because the first paragraph is something that you could say where you're not trying to be, you don't have these abilities. The first paragraph was partly good advice. Use whatever ability you think you have to guide you to ask questions to attempt to get concrete evidence, and then act once you have the concrete evidence. That to me seems like a good bit of advice. Saying that there are other psychics who are more or less gifted, I would have stuck with just less.
Yeah,
because you've
just walked off the end of the pier at that point.
Yeah. I actually don't even agree with that advice, because people chasing things that they think are there is how false allegations get made about, you know, child sexual abuse. And you have to be very systematic in how you ask children about things, and you cannot be leading. And that's how this repressed memory shit got started.
Yeah, but I think that's what the agony aunt is trying to do in a way that doesn't alienate, is pointing out evidence is kind of what you need to have.
Yeah, I agree with that. You should seek evidence, but in 20 seconds, she's just shown why I love her, and that is I agree with her that we've seen so much of this repressed memory stuff, and we know that what the therapist says to the client guides what kind of answers they get. And yeah, I think this could be very
Well, it depends on how you say it, though, because, I mean...
Do you think that somebody who's convinced that they have psychic powers is likely to say it in a way that doesn't cause problems?
I don't think most social workers are likely to say it in a way that doesn't
cause problems. No, but we're talking about this one. Yes. Okay. So, yeah, definitely bad advice across the board.
Yeah, and actually reading about repressed memories and people having lives ruined by abuse of which there's no evidence is one of the earliest things that got me really interested and skeptical in a broader way than atheism.
But unless I'm misunderstanding, Beth, like there are two reasons to approach that line of questioning. And I think the issue is how you do the questioning, not what instigates it necessarily. Because you can see any number sure. of signs of abuse, and then you do kind of drive things in that direction to figure out what's going on. And I think that's what the Agony Ant is advocating, not advocating necessarily a particular approach once the questioning's there, once the issue comes up to some degree.
Yeah. I'm a fan of. I mean, I think one of the things that good social workers and psychologists do is they're observant, and this guides which questioning paths they take. So if you're asking the right questions, I just don't have any good reason to think that this person's going to ask the right questions. Shilling doesn't even think social workers are going to ask the right questions, which is going to piss off a couple friends of ours. But yeah, but thanks for correcting me before I was off the deep end there. But yeah, it's oh my gosh, they're sharing something on the computer that's funny. Well,
actually, neither Dennis nor I is sure what an agony ant is.
Abby, Ann Landers, all of them, the advice columnists, they're called agony aunts.
Aunt.
Yeah, okay.
Got it.
It's one of those words where when I just say that word, I say aunt, but agony aunt. It's sort of like I always say pecan, but pecan pie. When certain combinations, I just...
And see, I say pecan pie.
I thought it was like Adam Ant's mother or something like
that. Adam and the Agony Ants? All right. So there's a story... a Christian group called You Can Run But You Cannot Hide has a musical group called Junkyard Prophets. And they held, they were invited to do an assembly at Dunkerton Community Schools in Iowa.
Boy, their title sounds threatening.
They apparently misrepresented what they were about because it was going to be, the talk was going to focus on keeping kids clear of drugs and alcohol and stuff like that. Instead, there's a couple of videos that are up. I think, yeah, Hemet had posted these as well. They went off on homosexuality, rock music,
sex in general.
Just, yeah, they were overly focused on sex. They did a lot of abortion stuff, talked about infanticide, and evidently showed pictures of the brutalization of newborns and then some late-term abortions, the stock photos that people
used for that.
After
they separated them, that's what they did to the girls, and that's what the videos of. The boys went in for a lesson on how the Constitution is Christian.
Yeah, and I don't know what lecture the teachers got. So after giving their initial thing...
Yeah, that's the other thing that's important, is they separate the boys and girls, but then they also separate them from any of the teachers. The teachers are in a completely different room, unaware of the bullshit that's going on.
Yeah, so the teachers are getting one bit of education. The boys are getting another bit of education about the theocracy stuff, shit. And the girls are getting an education about abortion and sex and submission.
So have these people been arrested?
No. First of all, it's legal for them to do that. What has happened is that the principal of the high school has resigned. When parents found out what was going on... they complained. This group got paid somewhere between $15,000 and $2,000 to come in and do this presentation. I think they should be sued.
Yeah.
Because
handing the children over to a bunch of strangers without any supervision?
Well, I don't know that there was totally no supervision. They split them up. I don't know that they necessarily left the girls alone with the guy from the Junkyard Prophets band.
Right.
But I'm thinking that the group should be sued to get that money refunded to the school, because in my estimation, they falsely represented themselves.
I disagree with you.
Really?
Read that. What's right above that underlining in red Mm-hmm. What they describe as what they do is not inaccurate. It doesn't go into depth, but it says they're there to talk to them about lyrics, what kind of people they hang out with, and sex, and things like that. So it's very vague.
I think,
you know, they're pieces of shit, but the culpability for this situation rests with the school. The school should not have invited them, but if they got the invitation, they're going there, I think it's fair game. I don't think they misrepresented themselves because the principal did not ask the appropriate questions or get the appropriate information.
Yeah, when you look at what it says they're going to talk about, it says, Dean Jake McCauley will discuss issues such as drugs, alcoholism, suicide, sex, media, our country, our veterans, our freedom, the Constitution, the choices we make, the friends that we have, and more in a language that speaks directly to the heart of this generation. It's an overall message of responsibility. All of our material is made public and is factual in content and in form. Well, that's just a lie.
Yeah.
We have an agenda for truth and not an agenda for opinion. That's the part of this that pisses me off to the point that I think they should be sued, because they were clearly there as a religious group offering a religious message. That was not mentioned. And when they say that all of their stuff is fact and not opinion, and that it's, you know, we're here about truth and not opinion, that is also false, because it's they offered their opinions on homosexuality, on the theocracy stuff, and abortion. So I'm thinking if I was the school, I'd ask for my money back. I don't know that I'd necessarily sue, but I would ask for my money back. The thing that you missed while you were out is that the last bit.
I didn't miss it. Okay. I think it's legit. The facts don't have to be correct. If they can cite it, that's good enough for what they presented there. Because
they said we have an agenda of truth, not an agenda of opinion. And what they offered was their opinion on homosexuality, on abortion.
No, what they offered was a lot of leading statements that gave, like, their opinion comes across in it, but they don't explicitly say, I think homosexuals are shit. What they do is they
asserted
all
it,
this propaganda.
They asserted it. They asserted their opinion as fact.
But citable. Not credible. They pull out all these statistics. They say, like, the average gay child molester is going to molest 172 kids before he's caught. The average death of a homosexual male is going to be age 42. And all these statistics that are well known to be bullshit, but they're citable. And that's where I think any liability on their end lies. Not, you know, ethics are certainly against them, but in terms of liability, it's...
They also offered their opinion about the moral nature of this stuff.
Potentially. I think it's a potential problem, but very unlikely to be so. Because if they offered their opinion on suicide and they offered their opinion on alcohol abuse, no one would have a problem with what's written in their little contract. It doesn't say that it's completely free of opinion or that it is fact-based.
We have an agenda for truth and not an agenda for opinion. All of our material is made public and is factual in content and form.
See, I don't think that would be, in terms of liability and in terms of legal wording, I don't think means that they can't express an opinion. Because if you read that, and they did come in and they did a damn fine thing about alcoholism and about STDs and things like that, that was a solid, good presentation, there would still be opinions in there. There'd be plenty of them, and nobody would complain. It wouldn't be an issue. It's only the nature of their opinions that are problematic.
Well, it's one thing to give facts and statistics about suicide and alcoholism and the damage that's done, because that's actually true. It's another thing to talk about homosexuality being immoral.
Ethically, it's very different. I'm saying legally, I don't know that it would be.
We've got as much time as we need on the show. Let me play this clip. It's like 3 minutes.
Yeah, I don't know how well it'll play because the audio quality is kind of sketchy.
Let's talk about moral standards for a second. Anybody heard of him? How many of you guys have his albums besides the teachers?
So the audience at home can hear that.
No, Elton John sings for Disney movies, okay? They use him on a lot of their soundtracks. How many of you guys have seen The Lion King? That's what I thought. So you know Elton John. You remember the song that he sang on there? This is his moral standard for little kids. Now again, this is an influencer of kids. I crave to be loved. There's nothing wrong with going to bed with somebody of your own sex. I think people should be very free with sex. they should draw the line at goats. So his moral standard says, don't do goats. That's where you stop, right there. Is that a good moral standard? Would you allow your son or daughter to spend the night at Elton's house? No. Photograph my mind and whatever else you'd like. She does a pornographic film shoot. I'm beautiful in my own way because God makes no mistakes. I want you to listen to this song because, you know, 10, 15 years ago, this wasn't pushed on you 24/7, but now it is. They do it through pop culture. They do it through media. How many of you guys believe the media in here? You know, you're like, oh, it's in the paper. It's got to be true. I'm not talking about the price of feed and all that. I'm talking about, like, pop culture media. It's got to be true. This is what they're pushing. No matter gay, straight, or bi, lesbian, transgender life, no matter black, white, or beige, color, or orient made, I'm on the right track, baby. I was born this way. What she's saying is, if you're black, it's the same thing as being gay. Sexual deviancy. It's the same thing. Taking somebody's skin that they have no choice when they're born. You're born as a product of your parents. But your actions, listen to this, your actions, you can be judged and you do have control over it. You control what you do with your life. You can't control how you're born. But yet she would have it both the same way. Now, did you know in our country, you know, this puzzles me, because we always talk about love and all these musicians, oh boy, they talk about love because they're so in love. And it's a different guy every video. And the guys are so in love. They got 6 half-naked women around them, and they're in love. That's not love. Love stops destruction in somebody's life. Love says stop. Everybody's talking about love. Do you know the average age death of a homosexual male is 42 years old? Yeah, his actions literally kill him. And he lives about half his life out. So do you think it'd be love to say, hey, yo, stop that? Do you think it's love to tell young ladies in school, listen, don't go out and have sex with just anybody. You could catch a disease. Same thing with guys. You could get pregnant outside of marriage. How many of you are from broken families? Your parents split up or been divorced? Yeah. Now, thank God every single one of you are still here. And thank God mommy and daddy chose to keep you. You know why? Because now you can make a choice to do the right thing, but it ain't fun. Growing up when you don't know your dad, your mom, growing up with your parents fighting all the time, is that fun? Is that love to tell this generation, ah, don't even worry about it? No, love warns. Up until 1961, it was illegal in all 50 states. We protected that institution. Now, teachers, they talk about sex all the time on television. That's why we bring the topic up. It's important to understand where love and its guidelines and its boundaries are. In 1998, if you're busted in Rhode Island, you go to prison for 20 years. In 1973, they taught it was a mental illness. Now, what are they teaching you?
All right. So listening to that clip, which I was the only one who could hear because I'm the only one wearing headphones.
Matt was dictating the important points to those of us who hadn't heard.
What I heard was a religious message where he's talking about thank God this and thank God that for subtly relating God to these moral issues. I heard... the homosexuality is a choice thing laid in there.
Oh, he said and you can control your actions. Now, that's an implication, but that is a different way of saying it.
My big point on this is that the message that they gave, or the bits of the message that I've seen, does not line up with the impression that they give when they say, we're going to talk about these subjects and we're about facts and truth, not opinion.
Right. But the dissonance is not at an actionable level. Well, I don't believe it could be at an actionable
level. That, I think, is a matter for the court. But at a minimum, I think the school should ask for their money back.
Oh, yeah, certainly.
And then, you know, maybe they sue, maybe they don't. But they should be asking for their money back because this is a bit of, it's almost a bait and switch. In that we want to come talk to students about drug and alcohol abuse, and we're here to present facts, and we're going to talk about, you know, Constitution. They list off this laundry list of topics. So what happened was the principal should have gone and looked at all the material first, which is probably why he has resigned.
Or done a single search.
Yeah.
Anything.
Which is probably why he has resigned. And, you know, good for him for resigning.
Sounds like a failure of vetting.
Ooh. You mean like Obama? That's what Palin has said about Obama that he wasn't properly vetted.
That's what a bunch of Republicans said about Palin.
I know. That's what's so funny about it. I watched. Did anybody else see the HBO movie Game Change?
I really want to.
It's downstairs on the TiVo. I've watched it. I will watch it again just because it's like one of the coolest bits of Sean Fraud I've ever seen.
I saw the trailer for it. I love Julianne Moore.
Yeah.
It looked like a lot of the clever bits I've seen in very similar political semi-comedy biopics.
Yeah, the thing is that the people who are coming out saying this is fiction are like Sarah Palin. And the people who are coming out and saying this is accurate are the Republicans who were involved in this process and portrayed in the film saying, yep, that's accurate. Yep, that's what happened. When I was watching the movie, it was like deja vu. I remember this specific conversation, you know, the not knowing why there's a North Korea, South Korea thing. But it's not knowing what the Fed was, not knowing that the Queen is not the head of the British government.
Yeah, people forget that the really funny thing about that first performance on Saturday Night Live where they mimicked the Katie Couric interview was that other than a few things at the end, quite a lot of the quotes were actually just verbatim from the interview.
Yeah. That's why I found it really unfunny, because you could have just watched the interview again. Like, some things are hard to make fun of because of when it's that funny, genuine. Somebody else just doing the same shtick, what can they add?
I think it serves to highlight it.
But back to the You Can Run cunts, they're definitely misrepresenting themselves, but I think they're doing so in a way that's probably legally safe. Now, a bigger problem I have is people are pointing out the, not subtle, but the low end of the spectrum of the guys, the shit these guys are up to. One of them at one point said that Muslim countries that execute gays are more moral than the United States is for tolerating them.
Awesome.
And he's made comments left and right along those lines. Bradley Dean, he's the cunt at the top of their little organization. And he's had ties to numerous politicians who eventually, with enough pressure, have sort of disowned him as much as they can. But that's what they do, is they go around schools.
Why does it take pressure?
Getting thousands of dollars to basically preach hate, and they are recognized by the Southern Poverty Law Center as a hate group. And as far as I'm aware, I haven't heard of them ever being invited back to a school.
I guess that's something to be mildly optimistic about. One of the big things was they were teenage girls who were extremely upset and crying, and went to their parents and they were like, look at this, you know, and there's evidently some of it was perhaps shot on cell phone video or whatever, and the parents were outraged, and eventually the principal resigned, so there was somewhat of a good result out of this, and there's more public awareness, I would hope, so that no other schools bring these people in. Now, it's probably still going to happen because this information was public before, and this principal didn't bother to look. So our educators need to actually do a better job of making sure they know who they're inviting.
Yeah, but just because they know it's unconstitutional bullshit doesn't mean that the educators are going to be on the side of weeding out the unconstitutional bullshit. Like, you know, there was this prayer that was up for a while.
Yeah.
Well, maybe, but for the types that want to get that proselytizing in their school, they might be less likely to pay a couple thousand dollars for it, because those type of people, they know people who will come and do that shit for free at their school.
You just walked all over Russell's segue.
Oh, did I? Sorry.
It was so funny because Russell was like, and there's this prayer that's been up at school, and I was getting ready to go. So we're all familiar with the evil little thing, Jessica Ahlquist, who...
Would she be speaking at one of these conventions?
I think she's speaking at the Reason Rally today.
Ah, today.
And good for her, because I'm incredibly thrilled with what Jessica's done and with who she is. And I find it rather disturbing that so many people on the other side of this issue want to say, oh, she's just being used by her parents.
Going to repeat one of the best and most articulate interviews of the last year.
Exactly. We had her on the show.
She was great.
She's either the best child actor in history who has been taught by, you know, the best schools and given perfect lines to read back, or she is what she appears to be, which is an incredibly well-spoken, thoughtful young girl who's actually willing to stand by and take action despite potential consequences.
It does happen.
Yeah, it does. And she's not alone. You've got Damon Fowler and a number of others who have taken actions along these lines. So Meatloaf, yes, that Meatloaf, the bat out of hell guy, thinks that the world's going to hell or gone to hell in a handbasket, and he's blaming Jessica Ahlquist, though not by name. He says, quote, "We got here because people stopped caring about other people and only care about their beliefs and what they want. The best example is in America. In this one high school, for 50 years, a prayer was hung on a wall. All of a sudden, a daughter and a woman who are atheists complained. Being an atheist is fine. You don't want to believe in a God? I don't care. You don't have to. But something that's hung on a wall for 50 years, people don't even see it anymore. Then what fucking difference does it make if we take it down, Meatloaf, you thug? If you've got that much time on your hands," he says, "go down and help at the children's center. Go help at the homeless center. Go do something that helps other people. People need to stand up, be responsible for themselves, and help other people. The internet is to blame. The comment pages are to blame. There's such hatred spewed out over the stupidest things, it makes me angry. For 6 years, I've been saying the world's going to hell in a handbasket, so I wanted to make this record." This is advertisement for evidently his new album. What he says here is, "There's such hatred spewed out over the stupidest things, it makes me angry." I agree, Meatloaf. You've made me angry because you're spewing ignorance over something. This wasn't, we don't like your prayer, we're going to take it down. It was a constitutional issue. It is somebody who's standing up to fix the things that we've been doing wrong for decades. She took an action. We got a fair, good result. Nobody stole away anybody's religion. Nobody forced anybody to stop being religious. Nobody took away anybody's religious beliefs. You yourself think that nobody even sees that prayer anymore. So what's the big deal about taking it down? Well, the big deal is it sends a message. This is not, in fact, a Christian nation. You do not get to insinuate your religious views into public schools and into the public forum. You do not get to marginalize secular citizens. And we're not going to stand here and take this anymore. By the way, we are helping the homeless and feeding people and doing good things. How dare you pretend that this is just the one and only thing?
Right. And the first part of that quote, wonderfully ironic.
Yes.
I mean, it's religion that's doing that.
Yeah. Anyway, I've always liked Meatloaf.
Yeah. Bat out of hell kicked ass.
I thought he was good in Fight Club too. I loved him in Fight Club.
And he was so effectively murdered by Tim Curry.
Yeah.
Let's not forget his magnificent performance in Black Dog.
Okay.
I like to get like,
he doesn't always make the best decisions.
I think that I get the outrage. But it's, no one expects nuanced political theory from Meatloaf.
I agree.
He's making an appeal to traditionalism. It's lazy and a little fallacious, but I can't bring myself to really care.
Here's what I would have liked to. I wish he would have made this announcement about 3 weeks ago, because I would have started an internet campaign, which is evidently the root of all evil, to invite him to the Reason Rally to debate Jessica Ahlquist. Because she'd wipe the floor with him.
Oh, yeah.
I guess. I mean, I'm assuming. I've heard her speak enough to know that she's at least on the right side of this issue. And then he might walk away going, okay, this isn't a daughter being coerced by her mother. I love the way he put those two things together as if that's the case. And he might have to recognize that, you know, we can do lots of good things. I agree with him. Let's do stuff to help people. But let's also do stuff to fix things so that what may be as much as 16% of the population, the non-religious, aren't continually marginalized.
Yeah. You know, how much you sweat does not win an argument.
Well, I think, though, that, I mean, one, no chance of that with the publicity for the new thing.
But, sure.
The way he says his opinion, it doesn't like the actions, and it is an appeal to traditionalism, but it's not sufficiently personal and sufficiently negative that he seems necessarily unreachable on that issue. I think that, you know, if enough press came about and he did end up in a conversation with Alquist, yeah. I think...
Oh yeah,
there would be nuances of change in his position. He's not completely.
He's not a Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah, it's not that extreme. It's just a bit naive.
Yeah, it's, you know, we've seen a lot because of this Rush Limbaugh, debacle. There's a lot going on. I've been paying a lot of attention to the Republican primaries and the various Etch-a-Sketch candidates and their...
And the war on women.
Yeah.
Oh, I fucking hate that phrase.
Yeah.
I just think it's useless. It, to me, it sounds exactly like war on Christmas. Uh-huh. It sounds exactly like war on religion.
Here comes
it does
woman.
Nothing to convince anybody who does not already agree with you.
Do you have an alternative term?
Do we need... A single term.
Well, there's an organized effort. There have been more laws passed in the past year than in many previous years combined.
Like
the graph is like this. There
we
is
need
an
to
organized
have a war on atheism because the same thing has happened there. And then two, war on women. I think
there is a war on atheism. I think there would be a
completely
reasonable.
There is not.
I don't
legislation
think so.
Crops up. Patterned with consistency, that is bullshit. That happens against a number of groups, and I'm not entirely convinced that women are a target because a lot of these issues are not issues that the conservatives are raising. Some of them are issues that the liberals are raising. So, how do you differentiate it?
No, that's not true.
Like the birth control issue.
No, that was not raised by liberals.
So the mandate for employers to get health insurance that covers birth control, that was
it covers all preventive care. Birth control was put in there as preventive care because it is.
Yes. No, I'm not saying it's wrong. What I'm saying, though, is that the reaction against that, that's what they have to work with, and that's what they're going to rail against.
No. That's the point. If I say, we're going to have health care that covers all preventive care, and this other person says, but we're not covering that birth control.
Right.
They are making the issue the birth control. They are making the issue about something specifically.
Maybe. How do you differentiate it between
maybe
being anti-woman and being anti-sex?
No. I didn't say anti-woman yet.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
I said that they made the issue about birth control, which is something that you denied.
And I said
them
maybe.
If the
issue is sex, then what's been proposed is limiting that issue to birth control within sex.
No. I said we're going to have preventive health care. And... my opponent says, but not contraception.
Right.
You said they didn't make it about contraception. They did.
I said they didn't set the terms of the argument. It's about contraception. Like, the topic is contraception, but their position could simply be anti-sex.
I agree anti-sex is at the root of it, but it affects women more, and they...
very, very slightly more. Because I guarantee you a lot of those
women are the ones who get pregnant.
Women go through the pregnancy. Yeah, you might be paying child support and you might have kids you don't want, but I think going through the pregnancy is
more
a little
severity.
A little
I was thinking,
more,
I was
severe.
Thinking in terms of numbers of people. But
they're not against men's contraception.
Men's contraception isn't covered. If there was a subsidy for condoms, I'm pretty sure
this,
they would
we're not
rail
talking
against
about,
that as well.
Condoms are separate from this. We're talking about actual medication that's preventive health care. And they're against contraception, and they're not. And I agree that it's probably about sex, because they're willing to tap dance around and say, if you bring a note to your boss that you're taking birth control for non-birth control reasons, then we're okay with that. They have made this about contraception. They have specifically made it about contraception with regard to sex, and that means they have specifically made it about women. You woman, in their view, a woman is it's okay for her to take contraceptives if it's not to prevent pregnancy.
Right.
that doesn't make their position necessarily against women, because if it was just against sex, no. It would show itself the same way.
I've had this argument about 20 times with the woman standing next to me. It doesn't mean that their goal is to attack women. The effect of their claims is to attack women, and they just don't care that that's the effect. I'm not saying that their motivation is to attack women. The effect is a war on women.
See, I still think that is a gross oversimplification, and it limits the appeal of the message if it was put out there as an anti-sex message. Because severity-wise, you're absolutely right that it affects women more. But in terms of the number of people it affects, no one's talking about the number of guys who are affected by this who are sleeping with women who work, and they'd love them to have birth control too. And I'm not trying to make this like
said they didn't want to cover medication for sickle cell anemia? Wouldn't that be a war on blacks?
Not necessarily. It would depend on what else is.
Wouldn't it primarily be? Wouldn't it be fair to kind of characterize that?
Yes.
Okay.
But in that case, there are analogs to it that would not affect simply blacks that are included.
And there are women who take birth control for non-contraceptive means.
Yes, but it's a part of the issue, but it's not the major issue, because when conservatives hear that, they don't really know how to respond to it. So clearly, that's not what they're after.
Yeah,
what I'm
but
saying,
this is kind of the same argument as people who come at us and say, "Why do you bother talking about atheism? You're not going to convert fundamentalists. Don't care about them. I care about getting the majority of reasonable people to be against them, not the hardcore conservatives to change their mind. I want to marginalize them, not convince them that they're stupid because they're not going to believe it."
Yes, but I think this war on women thing, what it does is it alienates a lot of people who would potentially be on that side, because you hear war on women, you expect some legitimate misogyny that is clearly presented, and that's not
it.
What you find when you look at it objectively. You just fucking don't. There's misogyny. I think a lot of the people involved are misogynistic, but when you look at what they're doing.
Wow. You think a lot of the people involved are misogynistic, but you don't see misogyny.
I'm saying when you look at the issue from a neutral standpoint, what you see are...
And first of all, I didn't raise misogyny. I think that's a term that's overused.
Yeah. But here
but
I...
When we're talking about war on women, I'm not particularly a fan of the phrase if it's used to talk about what their motivations are. But I think it's accurate when we talk about what the consequences of their actions are. It's a marketing thing that is a bit sensationalizing, but it accurately assesses something that's going on, which is women's health and women's health issues are consistently under attack at an increasing rate, a dramatically increasing rate. Now, you might rephrase that to say, well, it's not a war on women. It's a consistently increasing attack on women's health, but war on women just flows better.
I think that it's over-sensationalizing, because anybody who doesn't see something more extreme that's more in line with the expectation of that, when they see that it's bad, but it's nowhere near as bad as it sounds when you hear war on women, that's going to make them more complacent, I think.
No, look, voter ID laws. You could phrase that as a war on the poor. War on the elderly. And you would be accurate in what the ultimate consequence of this is. It doesn't matter to me.
See, I would view that as misleading, to say the least.
I don't.
If your particular legislation has this as its primary effect, I think it's fair to raise that, to say, look, this is what you're doing. And if the person comes back and says, well, that's not what I intended to do, okay, fine. But at least you have to acknowledge that there's a problem here. It's the consequences that actually matter. And I'm a fan. I would love for everybody to have for example, a voter identification card. I would actually be in favor of the government paying for it, apart from the problem of, you know, people are going to lose it, and then you've got this constant stream of money for everything. But the laws as they're presented... disproportionately, first of all, there's no reason to think that there's not any good evidence for any sufficient voter fraud that the voter ID laws would resolve. And so it ends up being an attack basically on the poor, the elderly, people who can't get the IDs. Comparing this to the contraceptive thing, we had a mandate that was simple and that didn't make an issue out of anything, including women's health, and said, we're going to have preventative care. And these people, led by people like Santorum, who are opposed to contraception because he thinks it leads to sexual promiscuity and it is in opposition to his religion. These are people. There's a phrase that Beth used once that I objected to, which is they want to make women suffer. I don't think that's their goal. I think that's the effect of what they're pushing.
Right. But the phrase war on blank, to me, is clearly a phrase of motivation for action.
I think
there's been no war on drugs because there's been no effect on drugs.
The word war has been so diluted over the last few years that I think it's perfectly acceptable now.
I could maybe see having it war on women's health instead of war on women, because it's not like they're actually trying to kill women or trying to attack women and all of their rights. But war on women's health, I could maybe see as an improvement. But war on women is shorter, and it gets people's attention.
What about war on sex?
It's not a war on sex.
Yes, it is. It's going to get a broader group.
I'm down with the war on sex.
There isn't a war on sex.
Because I think that the motivation is less anti-woman than it is anti-sex. Now, there's no, you know, condoms aren't prescription, so they're not going to have room to raise that issue. But if there was proposed subsidy for vasectomy and condoms, I'm pretty sure 99% of the assholes that are supporting anti-contraception movement would be just as against that, and they would yell and raise all hell about
I agree.
That. That's what I mean when I say that they haven't determined the scope of the debate.
What fucking bizarre world did I live in where my wife's agreeing with you?
Well, I don't totally agree. I'm still going to use the war on women phrase, but I will. War on sex, that's good too.
Anyway.
So we're going to expand it.
Yes.
I'm still against that phrase. I'm just saying it'd be better.
I also think we should annex Poland.
instead of war on sex, can we call it a police action on sex? There's a police action on sex.
But the war on religion, when you look at the effect, it does.
War on religion?
War on religion, war on Christmas, it does negatively affect those bodies. It does negatively affect the religious, and it does negatively affect Christmas celebration. Now, it does that in a way that balances out the over-positive enjoyment that they've had, having, you know, special access, but it does reduce what
there's
they
no
have.
War on Christmas. There's no legislation to take Christmas away.
But for what the phrase means,
people
I think
complaining
it's,
about it is not on the
I
same
think it's
level.
Perfectly analogous.
If all they were doing was running around, not proposing legislation, but saying, hey, we don't want women to have contraception and we don't want people to have sex, well, I would say that war would be an exaggeration. It's the legislation part of this where they are. It's tyrannical for them to attempt to impose their moral views on everybody else. That's the part of it that I think gets close to justifying the war thing. The reason I don't think war on Christmas is justified is not because there aren't people who are opposed
well,
to Christmas or anything
but
else.
It is judicial.
No.
The number of court cases that are involved, there's still a governmental effect for the people who are saying war on Christmas.
How?
The judicial branch of the government is supporting the Constitution more and more, and so their scope of privilege is getting smaller and smaller, so it essentially does reduce the effect of Christmas to them.
Okay.
From their perspective, what they see is these people swaying the government
to get rid
of their traditions.
And I'd frame it as a war on bigotry and a war on special treatment, a war on religious preference.
I'd call it a war on Hanukkah.
Yeah. Dreidel, dreidel, dreidel. All right, anyway.
I mean, when people say, you know, you have to say Merry Christmas from now on, there's no more happy holidays.
Right.
That's just explicitly excluding Hanukkah.
And there's two sides to a war.
Yeah.
You know, there's the side that goes, oh, we're defending the Constitution. And the other side that goes, we're defending our tradition.
Right?
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, language issues aside, what we were getting at early on.
What were we talking about?
We were talking about the Republican primaries and the legislation about contraception and the fact that, you know, here we are in 2012 and we're rehashing this, and it's been kind of amusing. I said something that was discussed before the show instead of on the show. So I don't know what the hell we were talking about.
We were making a transition, I believe, from the A Day to whatever the next news item was.
I don't know. What was your next news item, Russell?
I don't know. Aren't we about done? you can get the movie Jesus Camp for free online now.
Really?
Legally.
Yeah, it's on.
You can always get it free online. But
I paid for it at the theater, and then I paid for it on DVD, and now it's free. Yeah. How's that fair? That's a war on my pocketbook.
But it's not on Netflix anymore either. It was on there.
This isn't exactly news, but the Phelps clan is there at the rally today.
I think that's worth talking about, because from my perspective, and I've not seen any indication of what else they've supposedly done, but someone from the NAP decided to send an invitation to the Phelpses. And as far as I'm aware, that's where he sent the invitation, was just to the Phelpses. And he's trying to pass it off as, oh, no, we wanted them to have their chance to be there. And to me, it's inviting your own fucking straw man for publicity.
Well, what strikes me as odd is, when have they ever needed an invitation?
Yeah. Well, it's just, he's making them aware of it, because if they show up, that's more news coverage. Well, and they look better in comparison. And I think it's...
So, I don't know how much of this you saw, but... I have been on Facebook and in comments on Hemet's blog strongly criticizing the National Atheist Party for this boneheaded move, because I don't have any objection to Westboro showing up at the Reason Rally.
Right.
I would actually probably be among the people who enjoyed the fact that they showed up, provided that they showed up on their own. My doomsday scenario for this is a news reporter. let's go live now to Matt Dillahunty out on the national grounds there where the Reason Rally is going on. Matt, what have you got for us down there? Well, let me tell you, Matt, there's a lot of godless heathens out here today trying to celebrate Reason and have a good time. But also here is one of the most hated groups in America, the Westboro Baptist Church, famous for picketing the funerals of our military members as they come back, and for websites like God Hates Fags and God Hates America. These individuals have picketed funerals and have lawsuits, and they're a constant thorn in the side of these sorts of events. I actually have one of them over here for a minute. Your name's Shirley Phelps Roper?
Yes.
and exactly what brings you here to the Reason Rally today?
I was invited by the National Atheist Party.
Wait, you were invited?
That's right. They told us to come.
By one of the organizers of the event?
Yep, we're here at their request.
Now, how fucking stupid is that?
Yeah,
I actually find that perfectly reasonable as a publicity stunt. I mean, first of all, it allows you to say, look, we're so accepting that we will invite these people who have nothing but hate for us to come and join us. And second of all, you know, it is attention getting, and I don't see anything wrong with that. It's like a friend of mine who was who was working with a play in college that was that had some nudity. They weren't selling tickets, so they called up the local Christian group and said, "Hey, I hear there's this play that's got nudity in it." They were all over it picketing it, and then the next weekend they sold out.
Yeah, it's fucking shameless is what it is. If you can't draw,
I'll tell you why. So, first of all, there's a difference between calling up Westboro Baptist Church and saying, "Hey, I hear there's a Reason Rally going on. You should go picket it."
Yeah.
It's different to send them a fucking formal letter saying we are one of the organizers of this event.
Is that what it was?
Yes, it was. Fucking letterhead from the National Atheist Party. We are cordially inviting you to come down here and participate in this Reason Rally thing. Because now, not all publicity is good publicity. That's a fucking myth. But second of all, you have turned the publicity about the Reason Rally into publicity about Westboro Baptist Church. And what the message that you've sent is that we are so fucking irrelevant that we had to bring in people to picket us. and you have diminished the value of 30,000 people getting together to celebrate reason. If they show up on their own, fine. If you invite them, that is a cheap publicity stunt, and it can. It may not necessarily backfire. I hope it doesn't. I hope the Reason Rally is a huge success, and I hope that this spawns a new era of people coming out and people being active on behalf of reason and secularism. But this was, in my opinion, one of the stupidest moves I've ever seen. And when people challenged the National Atheist Party on it, the first responses we got back were, well, you know, it's just a bit of fun, and we thought we'd invite them. And plus, nobody invited them to picket. We just invited them to come to the Reason Rally. Well, I mean, you're a fucking idiot to make. That is incredibly disingenuous. And then the follow-up response was, well, look, we're trying to say that it was a lot of what you said. We're not. They wanted to bring these people here so we could show people what we're not. We are not the hateful people. So we brought the really hateful people. Why on earth would you invite the most unreasonable people to be your publicity stunt at the Reason Rally? It shows a complete failure of thinking and leadership by the National Atheist Party.
Disingenuous or not, the one thing you said I don't have a problem with is giving the Phelpses more publicity. I mean, if it were up to me, I would love to see the Phelpses be out there as much as possible representing.
I've heard you complain about the way that, let's say, Fox News, for example, or other conservative outlets will invite on the worst example of atheism they can find so that they have their own straw man on the show. And I've heard you complain about that. Okay. How is this any different at all? It is inviting the most deplorable group so that when you could be accused of using a straw man argument, you say, look at those jackasses.
But I don't say that the Phelpses are representative of all of them. It's the Phelpses' choice to get out there.
When they're the only ones that you're inviting.
I mean, I kind of said the same thing about Ray Comfort. Is he a straw man? I'm not sure.
It depends on the nature of the discussion.
Part of this is the formal invitation. Part of this is the only formal invitation that was evidently sent out. I think I'd like to know, for example, I'm sure Nate Phelps is fine with it now, but Nate Phelps is actually speaking at the Reason Rally. I'd like to know if the National Atheist Party actually consulted with Nate before they invited all of the fucking family that hate him and whether he's just putting a good face on this. I would like to think that they at least asked him before they did it.
Yeah, well, I do wonder a little bit about his safety.
But he'll be fine. There won't be a single problem. A lot of the interaction with the Phelps clan is overblown. I'm sure I could go have a lot of fun with them. I'm not even worried about atheists getting in brawls with them or any kind of.
They do what they do very well.
I'm not worried about that at all. This is entirely about publicity. And the other thing is, we are trying to raise public awareness and get some news cycles focused on secularism and atheism. And the way the news channels work, you've seen Dave Silverman on Bill O'Reilly.
Yeah.
He gets 3 minutes at most. And if they're only going to devote 3 minutes to the Reason Rally and 2 minutes and 30 seconds of that is about the Phelpses protesting us, what the fuck did we get out of it?
Okay, and furthermore, that's even with fair coverage, I think to anybody who's not already on the same page, having them there is going to make the rally look worse, because for anyone who has any hint of negativity towards atheism and might respond to a positive news story just on the rally, when you put it next to the Phelpses, the immediate reaction is going to be, oh, two sides of the same coin.
Yeah, and here's my last kind of objection to this. First of all, I agree with the National Atheist Party's positions on a number of things. We had that conversation when their rep was on here. I'm just not particularly a fan of the name. This is a single example of one incident that I think is fairly boneheaded, but I don't want to consider this as the entire summation of the National Atheist Party. That's not what this is. We're talking about a single incident. And there are plenty of areas where I will be happy to support what they're doing, because they're primarily about church-state separation. But when we're looking at the Westboro Baptist Church with respect to the Reason Rally and things, one of the things that was raised was, well, we want to show that we're not them and that they're protesting us and that we understand that they're not, you know, most Christians, because this may make us look better in the eyes of some Christians. That, oh, wow, these people are being, you know, attacked by the Phelpses. This Christian group hates the Phelpses. The Phelpses hate us. The enemy of my enemy is my friend. No, wrong. Here's the fact that you don't understand. There are tons of fundamentalist Christians out there who despise the Phelpses. They don't disagree with them. Their problem with the Phelpses is not the message, it's the methods. And those people are going to say, yep, you are a bunch of fools. You are godless heathens. You are in opposition to what God wants this country to be. And it's no surprise that the Phelpses are out there protesting you. You deserve it. I don't like their methods, but I agree with them. You are not going to pull Christians over to our side by having us protested by Christians.
Well, but again, it's not the fundamentalists that we're ever going to convince. I mean,
I don't know
what those guys say really isn't of significance.
Well,
but that tactic is further impaired by the fact that it doesn't really take effort to raise the ire of the Phelpses. You're not going to really accomplish anything by getting them to demonize you and getting their seal of abhorrence.
Yeah, all you have to do is die and not be able to defend yourself.
Well, you know, it does fail that way. It's one of the things I pointed out on Facebook. What value is there in getting the people who hate everybody to say they hate you?
Yeah.
I mean,
like, there are some situations where that's not bad publicity. When the Pope calls you out, that's you know, I could see that putting a bit of a spring in your step. But when it's the Phelpses, it's welcome to the 99.5% of the world.
Yeah. Hey, atheists, we're just like Sweden. I mean, they've got the God hates Sweden thing going on. Atheists, we're just like Steve Jobs. All right, so has anybody seen any actual news reports from the Reason Rally yet? Because I think all of Freethought Blogs is like there, so all I've seen is guest posts.
That's cool and sad at the same time.
Yeah, we're lonely. We're lonely here in Austin. We wanted to...
Come on, this is the age of Twitter and Facebook. We should be getting reports.
Oh, that's what I don't have up. I don't have Twitter up.
Pulling it up.
So anyway,
I'm sure you'll find a lot of substance there.
Yeah. So well, just you know, I thought it was a boneheaded move. I think it would have been much better. It's one of those areas where if somebody would have just said, "Hey, there's this Reason Rally thing going on. Are you guys?" Oh, the other excuse that National Atheist Party gave was, "Well, they were probably coming anyway." Okay.
Tim Minchin is warming up. Freedom from Religion Foundation has a nice picture of a very crowded book signing.
Ooh, and Freedom from Religion Foundation is running their first national televised ad tomorrow. Yeah.
And Monday night.
Yeah. And it's, I saw it. I like it. And this is where I wanted to go a couple minutes ago. A couple weeks ago on the show, I called Rick Santorum, a Southern Catholic, was it? The new Catholics that are like Southern Baptists.
Yeah.
So Southern Catholic. Maybe it was a different phrase.
It was different. It was a portmanteau, I believe. Not a portmanteau, but it was something different. I'll remember after the show.
There's the who did the streak?
Ray Stevens.
Ray Stevens had a half Catholic, half Baptist, sort of a Captist thing was his deal. So here's the thing. Freedom from Religion Foundation is using Kennedy's speech on church-state separation.
Roman Baptist, that's what you
Roman
said.
Baptist was what it was. Kennedy. They're using Kennedy's speech on church-state separation. When I talk about, you know, Christians and Christianity, we tend to pretty careful, or try to be pretty careful, that we're clear that we're not lumping everybody into one bucket. I don't put everybody in the Westboro bucket. I don't put everybody in the Catholic bucket. Here's the thing. I can't even put all Catholics in the same bucket, because on the one hand, you've got Kennedy, who understood explicitly church-state separation and made that clear. And this is what the Freedom from Religion Foundation's advertisement is going to be. Then you've got Santorum, and he's Catholic, and that speech makes him want to throw up. Right. So even within the Catholic Church, probably one of the most rigidly structured churches that we still have about what is orthodoxy and, you know, what your position should be, you have two incredibly diverse positions. And I don't even think, I don't think that Santorum's position messes with Catholicism. I mean, you had, and by the way, if you just look at the last two popes, you've got Pope Benedict and Pope John Paul, and one of them is anti-science, and the other one was okay with evolution,
right,
and specifically said evolution is no longer a hypothesis. This is it. This is a theory, and it's real. And now you've got the current pope, who's a little more anti-science. I think he fired the Vatican astronomer.
He seems anti-science, but he doesn't seem to be prioritizing
right.
that position as much as the constant damage control. But
although, if I'm remembering right, I think he fired the Vatican astronomer at one point.
Yeah, but I wasn't sure of the circumstances, if it was his anti-science position or if it was,
I may be wrong on that. I'm trying to go from memory. But when you have two popes that are very different, back-to-back, John Paul was the kind of guy that... I don't by any means think he was a great man or did great things. I think he was just better than some of the ones before, and I think he was better than the one that came after. And then you have two very different Catholics in John F. Kennedy and Rick Santorum, which, by the way, I'm not, for or against any candidate on candidates' grounds. We're talking about, the actual positions here. And it just strikes me as odd that, once upon a time we used to complain because everybody wanted to use the same Christian label and it covers this wide ground. And I'm like, at a minimum, distinguish yourself by your denomination.
Christian doesn't mean anything.
And now Catholic doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
And by the way, it's the reason why Baptists are, we're Southern Baptists, we're Free Will Baptists, we're Independent Baptists, we're Liberty Baptists, There are going to continue to be more denominations and a lot more independence, and it's going to be watered down to the point where you're right. It doesn't mean a thing.
It doesn't mean a thing. All it does is contain a large group of people who self-identify as Christian. That's the sole criteria.
I even saw a Christian atheist. I think it was in Bill Maher's Religious. This guy up in front of the Capitol in D.C., with his "I'm a Christian atheist" sign thing. I don't quite get that, but so I think it's kind of Jeffersonian, perhaps.
So, I think it's desperation for attention. Look how novel I am.
All I can do is say, look, I'm not a Christian, and I don't feel, like it's my job to define what a Christian is.
Yeah.
Therefore, I guess the only thing I can do is say that Christianity is exactly what the last person who has self-identified as Christian that I spoke to said it was.
Cool. I'm a Christian.
What other conclusion can I come to?
Dennis, I'm a Christian and it's bullshit.
Therefore, Christianity says Christianity is bullshit.
Ta-da!
There we go.
I kind of like the ad, but I don't think it's going to be effective.
I
think that it's too narrow. What I would like to see, what I think would be a better approach for the message they're trying to get across, maybe you include the Kennedy clip, but even that's going to be kind of divisive. I'd like to see interviews with, just sort of on the street of people saying, I get my moral values from my church, and they point to their fucking church. And you can do this across, different people, different religions. Some of them, I get my religious values from my parents, and they point to their parents' house. And then at the end, in some manner, you highlight none of them need to get their religious values from the fucking state. And I think that would be a better approach because it underscores that church-state separation does nothing to keep you from your religion at all.
So, as a reminder, we started a contest a couple weeks ago. We had a couple entries.
Two.
That hasn't been terrible.
I think there's two. And this isn't me saying I don't want to give it to one of those two, but we didn't set a deadline.
Well, one of them...
Certainly, one of them didn't even understand what the contest was.
Okay, well, there was one that was basically expressing a personal distaste for an argument, which... I suppose I wasn't clear. I was looking for an argument that was simply incorrect. And the other one was about a gay rights argument. And they had a point there, but an argument regarding gay marriage is different from an argument regarding atheism.
So give us the contest guideline again, and let's set a date. By the way, we're still not sure what's going to happen with shows in April because I'm gone the 14th, 21st, and 28th, which are all Saturdays. So I'm hoping that people can maybe do rogue episodes, maybe get some interviews in with Greta and Richard Carrier and Vic Stinger and whoever else has got books coming out. Or we can move this to another day since we're going to be doing it remotely anyway. But we'll discuss that afterwards.
Yeah,
what the hell's the contest? And let's set it for May 1st or something.
Okay. If we have a show between May and fucking December, we will announce the winners. The contest is to find an argument for atheism or an argument against the existence of gods that is incorrect, a flawed argument that is wrong, and tear it the fuck apart. Not simply like, you know, I get why one doesn't really like this argument. It works, but they think it gives the wrong impression. I'm looking for arguments that are simply incorrect. They're logically invalid.
So just to be clear, you'll be doing the Christian apologist's work for them, except...
No, not necessarily.
I mean, if you were listening to a debate where an atheist was saying something dumb, at that point, you'd be taking the side of the Christian.
No. Well, you'd be taking
it's not a false dichotomy.
You'd be taking the side that we took when we did the Foolish Atheist show.
Right.
We're going to try to prevent atheists from making stupid arguments.
Well, I'm just clarifying that because somebody wrote in and like tried to debunk a Christian argument.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I didn't get that email yet.
So, yeah, not what we're looking for.
We're looking for intellectual cannibalism of sorts. We need to clean the backyard. Like,
yeah.
No doubt most of the listeners, and I know we sure as shit have heard atheists make arguments that we just want to hit them for. It's just so fucking stupid.
Like if you heard somebody with that pi = 3 thing.
Yes.
A lot.
Yeah. Hopefully something a little more substantive.
Yeah, something that people actually still use a lot.
That you have to explain why it's wrong, not just didn't happen.
Yeah, you could go. There's a lot of misstatements about the Bible that people would use. I'm not going to disqualify those because I think they're still interesting, but I think we're looking for something slightly more
broad. Yeah,
something
where you can show that you can articulately.
So, Dennis, if you want to prepare the closing remarks, I'm going to make one mention of one quick thing, which is he who shall not be named is going to be named right now.
Uh-oh.
Because I was reminded of our Foolish Atheist episode and the fact that Patrick Green had called in there talking about when he wanted to sue Ray Comfort, and people kept emailing him over and over and over again for years after the show. I'm probably still emailing him because the clip lives on YouTube and I warned him. He's a very litigious individual, and he's done a lot of lawsuits. Some of them were stupid. Yeah. Some of them were valid.
Right.
He was actually working on a new lawsuit against a nativity in a small town in Texas. He had to put that on hold because he had to have surgery in his eyes, which forced him to lose his job as a taxi cab driver and put him in a bad position, so he stopped the lawsuit. And a Christian, some Christians from a church took up a collection to help pay some of his bills and stuff. And he emailed me right away with what he was going to send out as a press release. And he's planning on writing a book on the real Christians of Henderson, Texas, or something like that. Where he was basically saying that he and his wife had been, what's the correct word? Treated poorly by Christians their entire life. And these people came along, and what they did was, quote, pure Christian. Now, that's bullshit. What, unless you mean they gave something to help make themselves look better and propagate this idea of Christian, you know, charity. There's nothing about charity that is limited to Christians or any religious group or non-religious group. It's about humans helping other humans. And there are people who are eager to do it. There are people who are willing to do it. And there are people who aren't willing to do it. But the people in all those categories fit everywhere along the spectrum with regard to their religious belief. So we talked about whether or not there were atheist charities that might be able to help him out. And I recommended, you know, that he contact Foundation Beyond Belief and SHARE and some others. And he wasn't able to get much help from any of the big foundations, partly because of legal reasons. You know, there's limitations on what you can give to a private individual.
Right.
There's also the ACA Because we're a 501c3 educational organization and not a charity organization, we couldn't do anything directly from the ACA funds, but we can encourage people to make donations. And one of the things I told him to do was, you know, he can possibly set up a like a PayPal page to make donations.
Yes,
and publicize this. Hemet publicized it at the blog the other day. There's several others who have mentioned it as well. He's managed to raise some money. I think at last I looked, it was like $2,500 or so to
just
help.
Just under $3,000.
Is it just under $3,000 to help with those? If I don't have the website up right now, I apologize because I'm getting this last minute. If you're interested in helping contribute, to his expenses and help somebody out, there's a link from Hemet's blog to his article where there's a link to the donation. It's a little bit of hoopy to jump through thing. My thing is, when I took a look at the donations, there's like a little thing off on the side that says where you can put a personal message along with your donations. And there's a bunch that are, hey, we hope you give Jesus a try and we're praying for you and all these other things. And then there's a bunch of donations that are just anonymous. And I'm happy that anybody gives donations to somebody in need. The fact that you're going to care. But I'm far more impressed by anonymous donations that don't come with a message so that it doesn't look like you're actually trying to market something. So if you want to give, please do. If you want to find other people to help out, please do. Let's help whoever
I'd
needs it.
I'd be remiss, though, if I did not call him out for a lot of his bullshit. He has since said that he's moving to Athens to study the Bible with this preacher who's reached out to him. And that if a nativity scene issue comes up again, he would be on the other side of it supporting nativity displays on state property. He's done a complete 180.
I haven't seen either of those.
It was according to KETK, I think, was the news affiliate. He's done a 180.
I did see him say that this doesn't change his opinion of Christianity.
Well, he hasn't said he's a Christian yet. He said he ask me next year, and there's a good chance. But wow. He did say he's going out for Bible study and to study Christianity with this preacher, and that he's done a complete 180 on that previous thing. And then throw in his litigious nature, trying to sue the Detroit Red Wings and Ray Comfort and anyone he can get his hands on. Atheists should probably start expecting to get a couple of lawsuits in a couple of years.
Yeah, maybe the case.
My problem is the disingenuous way that he is spinning the story. Basically, it strikes me as self-promotional and shameless. So
yeah,
if you want to donate, donate. But yeah. look the guy up, look at the news stories, and
my thing is that whether or not you donate, it doesn't necessarily need to be tied to the merits of his thought processes.
Right.
And this goes back. I hadn't read this. This just kind of confirms that when we did the Foolish Atheist episode and called him out for doing things that were irrational, that he's continuing that trend. Over the past couple of years, there have been some lawsuits that he proposed and actions he proposed, which were good, and some which were
frivolous.
Keeping up this,
a lot of
this irrational trend. His thought processes are such that, he seems to be one of those atheists who are reactionary. I don't like Christianity. I've been oppressed by Christians, and so I'm going now to attack, these Christian things. And there's no rational grounds for this. There's no, thought behind the law. For example, trying to sue Ray Comfort over bumper stickers
right.
that you found offensive because they said that April 1st was National Atheist Days, which I actually found kind of funny.
Yeah.
That demonstrates what kind of thinker we're talking about
right.
here. And the fact that, oh, something bad happened to me and a bunch of Christians gave me $400. Wow, that completely changes my perspective on Christianity. And now I'm going to go, study it, and we'll see what happens in a year or so. Maybe it changes his mind. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe atheists are getting sued. Maybe they're not. I didn't bring this up to bring him up as a foolish atheist again and trash talk him. It was sincerely here's somebody in need of some help. And if you're the kind of person who is willing to help somebody, irrespective of whether or not they're rational, there's at least information.
When you bring up someone who's done something that newsworthy, and if Green catches wind of this, it's possible that the two or three news stories I saw did a butcher job and completely took him out of context.
Yeah.
But there are three local news stories that are carrying pretty much the same story of atheists didn't help me in my time of need. Christians did. So I'm going to go study Christianity with this guy. And that, you know, I could see, you know, going out to study or something, maybe, but that he's done a 180 on his church state separation positions
reminds me of the threefold waterfall thing.
Well, it's, I mean, basically, it's, you know, it's that level. He's gonna,
well, yeah,
he's
at a low point and then the vultures swoop in.
The other thing is, perhaps, wow, this is just going to sound mean, but, you know, can't help it. Perhaps, I know that if somebody in the ACA was in this position, they'd have found the money.
Yeah.
And that's because we have, you know, a social group, a network. I have fallen on hard times before and been helped out. Dennis has helped me out specifically. Yes. There are, I've paid, you know, membership dues for people who didn't need it. You know, there were people we help in different ways. Patrick didn't have that kind of network within right. the atheist community because of his previous actions. There were, you know, in much the same way that we took him to task on the Foolish Atheist show, there were groups that really didn't care to associate with him because they felt that he was giving atheists a bad name by having so many frivolous lawsuits. So if he had been a bit more diligent in the lawsuit arena, he might have found himself in a position where he had a better social group and then would have never had to, you know, never expected to reach out to religious people.
Right.
But anyway, we're like an hour and 40 minutes in. I think Russell's antsy to go. Your internet folks are actually showing up. Dennis, take us home.
All right. Well, that was our show. We'll be back. We'll try to be back next week for another dose of nonfiction-y goodness. Until then, this is Dennis Lube, Matt Dillahunty.
Goodbye.
Russell Glasser.
See you later.
And Schilling.
Yes.
And Schilling. Saying if you must include us in your fiction, don't make it slash. We leave you now with Hell by Squirrel Nut Zippers.
Serious strife. Now you make the scene all day, but tomorrow they'll be held to pay. The people listen attentively. I mean about future calamity.